That woozy little piece of music means that we've returned yet again to Pop Culture Happy Hour, where the discussions of pop culture are real, but the drinks will remain imaginary until roughly 8 minutes after we're done taping. I'm Stephen Thompson from NPR Music. I'll be your host this week, but the cast of characters is exactly the same. From the NPR pop culture and entertainment blog Monkey See, we've got Linda Holmes.
Hello, Stephen.
Now, it is my theory that by asking me to host this week, Linda is setting me up to be the Tarveris Jackson to her Brett Favre, in the hopes that the audience will beg her to come back and host just one more season.
I would never make myself the Brett Favre in any scenario.
You're like a kid out here.
My ankles would never hold up that long.
We've also got, rolling his eyes at all the football talk, Glenn Weldon.
Hey, Stephen.
Glenn Weldon, what do you do?
I write about comics for Monkey See, and I also review books for the NPR website.
Excellent. And Mr. Trey Graham.
Hello, hello.
Trey, what do you do?
I edit Monkey See over Linda's shoulder, trying to be as annoying as possible, as often as possible.
Do you, like, poke, 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 poke?
Only virtually.
Do you flick her behind the ear?
Something like that, yes.
Now, so, Linda, I'm going to start with you. What are the Shmemmies?
The Shmemmies is a name that Kathy Griffin actually gave to the Creative Arts section of the Emmy Awards, which were given out...
I believe it was Saturday.
And the Shmemmies, the Creative Arts Awards, are the ones where everybody gets their Emmy who's not going to get it during the big primetime show. And, you know, the interesting thing about the Shmemmies, as Kathy Griffin likes to call them, is that...
I think that's what we should refer to them as from now on. The Shmemmies, as Kathy Griffin likes to call them.
The Shmemmies, interestingly enough, if you actually watch a decent amount of television, are where many of your... excellent creative people are actually found.
Okay, like showrunners?
Not so much showrunners, but your editors, your makeup people. For example, this is where Mad Men got their award for hair.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you watch Mad Men, you know they put a lot of effort into
hair. Well-deserved.
Well-deserved.
Mad Men also won for casting.
Yes.
And Kathy Griffin's label came about because the Shmemmies at least used to be the place where reality TV got its awards, right?
And it still is where many of them are given out. They're not all there anymore. The Reality Competition Program Award, which is where... Amazing Race always wins so far.
Jeff Probst always wins as host.
And that actually was at the Shmemmies.
In spite of his infernal meddling on Survivor.
Yes. This year, they moved the reality competition host to the Shmemmies from the Emmys.
And we can discuss, perhaps, some of the winners of several nights ago's Shmemmies.
Well, there was Jeff Probst.
Mm-hmm.
There was...
Which I protest.
Yes, I protested also. But Jeff Probst, I'm sure, if he were here, would vote, would tell you forcefully why it's important to vote for him, because he likes to influence the voting as much as possible.
Exactly.
This is also where the guest actor and guest actress awards are given
out.
And
this is where a lot of the press came in. This is where a lot of the...
Right. So in comedy for guest actor... It was Neil Patrick Harris when he was on Glee.
We'll probably cut the Glee Club.
What? But you were in the Glee Club. Show choir was your life.
It was, Will. And after I graduated, I hit the big time. I was a featured soloist at King's Island in the Doodle-Dee-Doo musical review. We were a smash. Then for 3 years, I did the cruise ship circuit. And when that dried up, I realized I had been sold a bill of goods. 9 years later... I woke up on a urine-stained mattress in the West Lima Crack District.
Monkey See, favorite / fixation.
That's right. Monkey See.
I feel like a giant beam of light should...
Monkey
should...
See, boyfriend / fixation / what?
Keep dreaming.
I'm convinced that he would like me very much.
Okay.
If ever we...
And his lovely husband, too.
If ever we met... Trey, we're in the realm of fantasy here. It's
right.
Okay.
Gotcha.
You know, the straight ones aren't going to marry me either. Anyway.
He also won for the Tonys. I mean, not for hosting the Tonys. That went to somebody else. But, I mean, the show the Tonys also won. So, technically, he got two Emmys.
Yes, weekend. He did. And then in the guest actress in a comedy, it was inevitably Betty White.
Right.
Sure.
For her turn on Saturday Night Live.
Now, you're unveiling your new muffin today. Are you nervous about how it will be received?
Well, you know, girls, when I was younger, I was so concerned with how my muffin looked. But as I got older, I started to think, to heck with it. This is my muffin, and I don't care how it looks. I'm just going to let it all hang out.
That's really progressive.
You go, sister.
That's right, child. I'm Florence Dusty. I'm 88 and a half years old, and I'm proud to unveil my giant Dusty Muffin.
That's gorgeous. Just look at that. Look at that.
It's timeless. Really, it's a lot went into that.
A whole lot of business.
Well, ladies, as I used to say to my loving husband, Irving, of 55 years, what are you waiting for, stupid? Eat it.
Again, you know, Betty White on Saturday Night Live. In terms of the actual performance, I didn't think it was anything super special.
Yes, but we should note, and only note in passing, that the episode that won for Best Outstanding Makeup was the Betty White SNL episode. Let's just keep going.
Thank you, Glenn Weldon. You'll be hearing from Betty White's people.
Now, should we actually criticize Neil Patrick Harris's win for guest acting, given that he was on one episode of Glee?
No, that's the way it usually works. And I, for one, am thrilled with this new, we're breaking the paradigm. Because the paradigm is to take a beloved actress.
It only took about 7 minutes into the show.
Well, right. But see, the way you normally hand out your guest actor Emmys is you take a beloved actress, a Kay Ballard, say, a Suzanne Plachet. You take all her makeup off.
You take a gigantic star like a Plachet.
You take a Plachet.
Charlotte Ray, if you will.
Charlotte Ray. Excellent. You take off all her makeup, you put her in a hospital bed, you give her leukemia, you have her suffer in noble silence for 2 episodes, boom, guest actor Emmy. That's the way it normally happens.
I had always thought that it was you take a slumming movie star.
Right, could happen.
And that's your way of trying to get a slumming movie star to show up at your Emmy Awards.
It's a variation on a theme.
That can also happen. But it is true. The only argument, I think, against Neil Patrick Harris winning for Glee would be that the way that they now do the guest actor categories, it used to be it was limited in terms of the number of episodes you could appear on, thus guest actor.
Right.
Now, it's the only qualification for that is your billing or your contract.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I'm looking here at the nominees, mm-hmm. and I'm, for example, seeing guest actor in a drama, and one of the nominees is John Lithgow.
And he won.
Right. Who won?
Yeah, but he's on that
and
show
all the
time.
And he was on the whole season of Dexter.
Right, he was on the entire season.
I mean, that's sort of like saying Alec Baldwin, if he weren't in the opening credits.
Right, and so the trick becomes, on the one hand, you want to say Neil Patrick Harris was more of a true guest, but in that same category was Mike O'Malley, who played the father of Kurt, the gay character, and their relationship was probably
on Glee.
And then we need to get rid of this faggy couch.
Hey, what did you just call him?
Oh no, I didn't call him anything. I was talking to the blanket.
No, you use that word. You're talking about him.
Relax, Dad. I didn't take it that way.
Yeah, that's because you're 16 and you still assume the best in people. What, you think I didn't use that word when I was your age? You know, some kid gets clocked in practice. We tell him, stop being such a fag. Shake it off. We meant it exactly the way you meant it. That being gay is wrong. That's some kind of punishable offense. I really thought you were different, Finn. You know, I thought that being in Glee Club and being raised by your mom meant that you were some, you know, new generation of dude who saw things differently, who just kind of, you know, came into the world knowing what it's taken me years of struggling to figure out. I guess I was wrong.
And their relationship was probably one of the most emotionally satisfying things that show did all year. Possibly the most emotionally satisfying thing.
I was going to say, I have not watched a lot of Glee, but emotionally satisfying doesn't always...
And the other thing about Mike O'Malley is that he had been really a comedian. You know, I don't think anybody really thought of him as kind of a heft.
Right.
Dramatic heft kind of guy. He had been on Yes, Dear, etc. Yeah, so why the doubters? So I think there were a lot of people who were rooting for Mike O'Malley. Just because that nomination, I think, was a little unexpected. I'm not sure everybody thought he was going to squeak in there. If I had been giving it out, I think I would have given it to Mike O'Malley. Neil Patrick Harris's part in that episode was a little more stunty, which is certainly the more traditional definition of a guest actor.
Now, has Neil Patrick Harris won an Emmy before?
Actually, I think these were
hers. He's never won for How I Met Your Mother. Oh. I'm not sure whether he's ever won for anything else.
See, and what I'm wondering is if there isn't a certain amount of, if I may reference a different awards show, if there isn't a little bit of the Metallica factor here, which is that if you get sort of a high-profile snub, and then the awards, which are sort of accustomed to giving awards to the same people over and over and over and over again, where once you get snubbed, all of a sudden you win everything you're nominated for ever. And including Metallica, where it's like, here's the ninth single from an album we released 6 years ago will win Best Heavy Metal Performance because it was released as a single 6 years later.
Yeah. It's possible. I don't know exactly whether there's some kind of dam breaking with regard to Neil Patrick Harris. Certainly, he's had a very big year, big couple of years. So he won that one. Betty White won the other one. Then on the drama side, it was John Lithgow, as you said, and
Dexter. And Margaret.
And Anne Margaret in SVU, I believe.
Yeah, I don't know what she did.
Which is sort of back to the lie in the hospital bed with leukemia model. Yeah.
Randy Newman won music and lyrics because he's Randy Newman, and that's the law. He always has to win one of these things. For Monk, because Monk always has to win
was
something.
Was it a song about how we're friends forever?
Yes, if I may interject with my What Randy Newman Has Become rant.
Please do.
Which is to say that, pop music's greatest satirist has devolved into releasing a string of songs for movies, all of which are a variation on "You're My Best Friend."
Uncanny.
Friends until the end.
And every last one of them reduces Thompson to tears.
Yeah. Every single one of them wins an Academy Award.
Helpless sobbing.
And prompts me to throw things at the
TV.
It's
the law. No,
because God bless Randy Newman, great songwriter, but oh my God, has he written the same song. I love to see you smile. What would I do if I didn't have you? You're my pal.
That's a little like Dylan. Dylan sounds like
you'll find that my impromptu impersonations often blend together.
Right.
My Brett Favre becomes my Bill Paxton very quickly. Are you ready to go back to Titanic?
Robot Chicken won for short form animation for the Christmas special. Yay. Anne Hathaway won for voiceover on The Simpsons. Colbert Report won for writing. Here's something. Can we talk about this? For outstanding commercial. There is a Shmemmy outstanding commercial. Old Spice Guy.
Stunned.
But why is there a Shmemmy for outstanding commercial?
They already
How
have
long has this been going on?
Set of okay.
Why would there be one?
They have categories in the Emmys and the Oscars for music, and yet there's still the Grammys.
Yeah. Well, but that's like suggesting that there should be a category at the Oscars for best trailer.
It might be in the technical somethings. I think there's something
at the Schmoskers.
Yes.
I might be imagining that. But I will say this. There is a difference between that and a trailer. As a trailer is made up of things from a movie. A commercial is an original piece. And I think if you look at those Old Spice commercials, not to be hopelessly biased in favor of the Old Spice commercials, but, you know, they are an original piece of very short filmmaking that I think was very creative. And I think you can make a pretty good argument for that being a
That's why they have a whole festival to honor them at Cannes, you know, like when they're not having the film festival there. But at the Emmys? Really?
Now you can't give an award for TV if it's meant to make money. Sorry, everything else on TV.
I'm just sort of curious about the idea of giving an award to something that's designed to irritate you between the things you've supposedly come
Well,
to
the
watch.
Point is that they're not necessarily designed to irritate you, and it should also be...
You have grown to love your cage. That's what's happened here.
Stockholm Syndrome.
Briefly, to respond to... I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. You're sort of arguing that the Emmys are somehow hallowed and cannot possibly be sullied or tarnished in any way. Tell that to the Emmy-winning 2.5 Men.
I will simply call upon a comment once made by my friend Sarah Bunting, who once said of The Apprentice.
Right.
It's impossible to tarnish The Apprentice because it is tarnished. I would say the same thing about the Emmys.
Okay, that's it for the Shmemmys, I guess. But, you know, you can't see the Shmemmys because, first of all, there's 78 awards that they handed out on Saturday. 78, plus, I think, 8 achievement awards. So that would just be deadly. But the one thing I would say is that I wouldn't mind seeing some of the Shmemmys because coming up this Sunday, the actors are going to thank their agents, their managers, and their God.
Mm-hmm.
But the nerds are going to thank their moms. I'd much rather see people thank their moms than the Gersh Agency.
I wish the Shmemmys would be on TV when they're on or would at least be streaming online. I was kind of irritated when I discovered you couldn't even watch a live stream. I mean, you can watch...
When you think of all the things you can stream online as they happen...
Think of all the webcams there are in the world. You couldn't put one up in the room where they're giving out the Shmemmys.
I'm with you. All right. We've done in the past, at about this point of the show, we've done the Regrettable Television Pop Quiz, and we have also done, I don't have the acronym handy, but we have done Pop Culture Blind Spots, shows that everybody loves, but which we have never seen, but remain notionally open.
Good then. Close enough.
This time I'm going to try a new one, and this is called Tomorrow's Rediscoveries. We talked a little bit last week about M. Night Shyamalan and Robin Williams and possibly Michael Cera, and possibly Jack Black, and possibly someday Zach Galifianakis, people who, when they show up on screen in movie trailers or in commercials or in conversations, everybody just goes, nah, I'm out.
Incidentally, one guy told me today that you don't actually have to see the visual. He said he just listened to me describe the trailer, and when I said M. Night Shyamalan, he said that he groaned out loud, moaned himself.
So what sort of pop culture pariah is due to suddenly make a heroic Mickey Rourke style or Ali Sheedy style comeback? Who will be sort of a certain amount of stunt casting will bring them suddenly back to popularity, where everyone suddenly is reassessing them and suddenly realizing, oh my God, so-and-so actually has turned out to be great. And you know, Mickey Rourke is a classic example of this, who starred in The Wrestler and was nominated for an Oscar, even though he could not have been, even though, you know, he had been in Sin City, you know, he was maybe slowly making an ascent, but it was somebody that nobody was thinking about as a likely Oscar nominee. Who is the, you know, is it M. Night Shyamalan? Will suddenly M. Night Shyamalan make a great movie?
No, I have it. Mine is so good.
I mean, I think Robin Williams has actually done this already. When he was in 1 hour photo.
Right, but it's over already, right?
Right, it has ended. Everybody has re-rejected Robin Williams.
Did not take.
He's been and gone a couple times, as has John Travolta.
Yeah. Right, John Travolta is a great example of this. Linda, you said you have a good one. What is your...
I have a really good
one. Okay, tomorrow's rediscoveries, what is yours?
Okay, I want to start with, do you have my music cue?
There is more to life than what you're living. Take a chance and face the wind. Open road and a road that's hit. Brand new life around the bend.
As you know,
the singer of that song.
As you know, if you watched a fair amount of 80s television, what we're talking about here is Tony Danza. And I will explain to you exactly why I think it's going to be Tony Danza. When I was at Press Tour, I watched a presentation of Tony Danza's new reality show, in which he taught high school English in a public high school in Philadelphia for an entire year.
Everybody gets nervous on their first day of school. I'm no different. It's hard being the new guy. You know, where I come from, I'm pretty popular, but that's not going to help me here.
I'm Mr. Danza. I'm your English teacher. Let's take attendance.
And this is... actual Tony Danza actually
actual
did this.
Tony Danza actually did this. It is not a joke. He went to all of their new teacher orientation. He taught for about 2 months, he said, of the time that he was there. There were no cameras. So I believe they're only airing 7 episodes. So the vast majority of what he did...
So they managed to distill a year?
The vast majority of what he did is never going to be...
So you're
going to
get the
TV.
Best 7 hours of Tony Danza's year.
And there was one scene that I thought was very fakey looking. But other than that, it's actually surprisingly compelling. And then he gave his... he spoke about it on the panel. And it was really... He has this overwhelmingly serious and sincere commitment to this idea of doing this. It's obviously something he took extremely seriously. It's not played as silly. It's not played like, doo-loo-doo-doo-doo, it's Tony Danza. You know, a lot of the kids had no idea who he was.
Oof, sad news.
I don't think it was that sad. I mean, I think it was good that he wasn't going into it.
Do today's kids not watch reruns?
I don't know that his shows are in reruns that much.
So. They could have seen him on the Tony Danza show, his short-lived talk show.
They certainly some of them knew who he was, but there were a couple who were saying, I looked him up on Wikipedia, I looked him up on YouTube.
Right.
And
the Tony Danza is not a Nick at Night personality, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and so he went in, he did this. When he talks about it, he's actually he came across very, very well, and he was very... you know, he's his own kind of eloquent when he talks about this kind of stuff.
I like to think of myself as my own kind of eloquent.
Well, and the principal of the school was there, and she is very clearly a zero-nonsense lady. And she, you know, she talked about having had some doubts about doing this, but then, you know, thinking that ultimately the benefits of having people get a chance to see what the school is like and what the kids are facing and stuff like that. Because it's a huge, huge public high school in Philadelphia. And she decided... we're going to make our deal with this. We're going to do it.
I like the idea of a no-nonsense principal just, like, giving Tony Danza what for. Like, listen, Danza!
It has...
Mona!
It has... It has elements of that. But the thing that was most interesting about him is that very late in the presentation of that show, and what happens is, you know, if you ask Tony Danza a question, he will tell a story for 15 minutes because that is the guy that he is. And it's sort of engaging and kind of embarrassing at times because he just loves to tell a story.
To listen to Tony Danza filibuster.
Absolutely. So at the end of this sort of somewhat, you know, he's telling a lot of stories about working with the kids. Somebody asks him sort of, well, you're Italian American. How do you feel about the kids on Jersey Shore? And he, first of all, says, I think it's a very bad example. And I think what worries me about it is that a lot of these shows indicate to kids that bad behavior is rewarded. And that's a really tough thing to counter as a teacher or a parent. That's the part of his comment that made it into a lot of media. Tony Danza hates Jersey Shore. Here's what he said after that. He said, but I will tell you, I was at the gym with an incredibly wealthy woman, like wealthier, he said, than you or me or any of us could ever possibly imagine. And he said, she was talking about, oh, I hate those kids on that show. Those kids on that show are horrible. I would never watch that show. And he said, and I said to her, well, how do you feel about the guys in suits you had dinner with last night who put them on television? And it was actually quite an insightful and devastating critique. And so he kind of pops out with these interesting little things. And I think if he comes off really well in this show, I mean, he's done a couple things in the past. He did The Iceman Cometh on Broadway. He's done a couple of ensemble pieces where he's tried to be a little more serious. I think there's the potential that he could kind of sneak in there, have a little bit of a Tony Danza-sance,
Danza-sance. Mm-hmm. Excellent. I will say I agree with you in that I think Tony Danza is a little bit of a punchline. But who hates Tony Danza?
Right.
Yeah, it's hard to actually dislike the guy.
He's a song and dance man.
You have forgotten that he, in fact, stepped in to play Max Bialystock.
He was
one of the replacements in the Nathan Lane part.
Yep, he was. So, you know, he can tap dance. Who really can hate a guy who can tap dance, I ask you?
Well, I think it's a perfect example of high name recognition, high punchline factor, low hatred.
Low hostility.
Affability.
I think most people would be, let's say, notionally open to the idea of a Tony Danza coming. So that's fine. Mine's Tony Danza.
Okay. Let's go with Glenn Weldon.
All right. Recently I saw the film JCVD, which is, of course... hold on. Which is...
No, I think it's awesome.
It's a great movie that kind of took this Jean-Claude Van Damme character that you've had in your head for a long time and just shone a light on him and told you that you really have to rethink Jean-Claude Van Damme. And I was thinking, what 80s martial arts action star is due for a JCVD-esque renaissance?
Who wasn't already in The Expendables?
We can dismiss him out of hand. Steven Seagal we can dismiss because he's busy cleaning up Jefferson Parish, Louisiana.
Yes, he is.
As chronicled on Steven Seagal, Lawman. We can dismiss Chuck Norris because he's an internet meme, and once you're an internet meme, I think everybody's kind of sick and tired of you.
Yeah.
You're looking at me and you're saying, I bet you're going to say, Jeff, the perfect weapon, Speakman.
of course, that's what I was going to say.
But I'm not going to say that because that movie, there was never really developed into a franchise that it should have been. No, I'm talking about a man who made but one film and then vanished into Hollywood legend. That one film, that one man, is Kurt Gymkhata Thomas.
Wow.
Now, Gymkhata, 1985 film.
All right.
1985 film, tagline, gymnastics skills, karate kills. Kurt Gymkhata Thomas, who is a gold medal gymnastics guy, plays a gold medal gymnastics guy who is picked up by the SIA, the Special Intelligence Agency.
Right.
See what they did there. And dropped into the fictional remote Himalayan country of Parmistan.
I just want to say right now, by the way, I'm going to commit right at this moment. If this happens, I will give you $1,000.
Hold on. So he's dropped into Parmistan, and what results, it doesn't matter why, what results
is... Parmistan, does that come grated and shredded?
That's right. What happens next is the best scene in the history of cinema, where our mulleted hero is being chased down an alley, which dead ends into, what else? Of course, a pommel horse, which he then proceeds to mount. you will hear Kurt Thomas dishing out severe gymkhana justice.
While pommeling?
While on a pommel horse. Okay. Doesn't really convey. But you have to imagine him...
Swiveling?
These Parmistanians with scimitars are coming at him one at a time, and he is dishing out, you know, your rear double scissor, your mushroom, your direct Stockley, your reverse hecht, your 900-degree Russian wind swing.
You don't actually know what any of these are.
I don't.
You've just gotten a list from Wikipedia. I would like to point out that you are reading off a list.
Yes.
This list would be much shorter if there was no such thing as the internet. Let me just put it that way. Yeah. Okay, so it's 25 years later. Right? This is the 25th anniversary of...
In the movie or Jim in life?
No, no. That film came out in 1985.
Right. Wow. So now it's this is the 25th anniversary edition.
And I'm saying what we need. Hollywood, I'm giving this to you for free. This is gold, what I'm giving you. We get the same guy who played his SIA agent to go to the small Texas town where the actual Kurt Thomas is now coaching gymnastics, pick him up, and drop him into a Taliban stronghold. Boom.
Wow.
Done. That's all we need. You want to win a ground war in Asia? Kurt. Gymkhana Thomas is how you win a ground war.
Okay, I take it back. I'll give you $5,000.
Does Al-Qaeda have access to pommel horses?
Is the thing.
There's also, in the alleys, there's also parallel bars, of course. You know, as there are.
Right.
Did they install parallel bars, or are there just, like, low-hung branches?
To you and I, they look like pipes.
Wow.
But to Kurt Gymkhana Thomas... They are parallel bars. So I'm saying, come back to the Five and Dime. Kurt Gymkhana Thomas. Kurt Gymkhana Thomas, we need you now.
I can take no more.
Okay.
I think Weldon has cheated, because as I understood the assignment, it was supposed to be something that was defensible and could actually happen.
Yeah. There's also the notion of tomorrow's rediscoveries implies that at one point it was actually discovered.
Discovered, right.
Yeah, I think Glenn has transcended the format. I'm going to use transcended instead of brutally violent.
No.
Trey Graham, perhaps you can rescue us from Kurt Gymkhana Thomas.
Well, I'm going to try. But I am open to the notion that Linda Holmes is going to give me $5,000 if this happens, because my choice, defensible though it is...
She didn't offer you $5,000.
That's right,
yeah, she doesn't know
what
you're
doing.
Back off.
She's about to.
All right.
Because I'm going to nominate Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, you know what?
I'm not giving you $5,000.
Not at all.
Lindsay Lohan was my
runner-up. Yeah.
I'll give you a dime if that happens.
Completely with you.
Maybe.
No, I think, you know, she's at that moment where, you know, the public might be ready for her to be redeemed.
I'd give her 5 years and then line up her guest Emmy.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
Yeah. Or as the New York Times proposed just this past weekend, a little Broadway show, the right vehicle, a little Tony Award, and she's
back. That would require her to show up.
Now we are given to understand.
Yeah, Broadway requires you to show up a lot.
A whole lot. The peg for this piece was that her mother has announced that she'll be moving back to New York when she gets out of rehab. And Lindsay Lohan will be moving back to New York after she gets out of rehab, which now we are given to understand will be shorter. And this is, you know, this has caused a certain amount of navel-gazing, both in the New York Times and the LA Times, about how, you know, New York is less of a pressure cooker than LA. The paparazzi aren't always following you around. It's easier for a celeb to be anonymous. And she's working on a couple of things right now, but I think the argument is that she might be able to put some distance between herself and the crazy.
Well, I think moving out of LA is an excellent step one.
Yeah. And we forget that Lindsay Lohan has real talent.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see her next in a movie called Machete, which is, believe it or not, Robert Rodriguez has taken one of the fake trailers that he and Quentin Tarantino made for Grindhouse and made a real movie. Based on this trailer. Lindsay Lohan, Michelle Rodriguez, a couple of other fun people are in it. And we will see, you know, I don't think anybody expects, you know, high art from this, because it is actually, you know...
It's made from a trailer.
It's a concept movie, right?
Yeah.
If she manages not to get fired, it'll be the first step.
Well, you know? It's actually going to be out next month, so it's in the can.
So she didn't get fired.
Yeah. This one's in the can. And I think it's just the sort of concept piece where someone like Lindsay Lohan, in a wacky role, might get the public's attention in an interesting way, in a way that's not about her falling apart in public.
Sure.
And, you know, we forget that even in imperfect vehicles, there's been a lot of critical love for this performer and her chops. There was a movie called Georgia Rule that didn't do a whole lot of business, I don't think. But, she was in this movie opposite Jane Fonda and Felicity Huffman.
Mm-hmm.
Not small talents, not small personalities. But the reviews of that film talked about what a strange and, sort of untidy vehicle it was, they almost all came around and talked about how she managed to put out a unified performance in the middle of it.
If she holds it together, if her rehab is successful, I absolutely think that she could have like a huge, huge second act.
If she gets well, I don't think there's anything that will keep her career.
But there's probably going to be
some
distance, some time here, because I mean the TMZ vultures are still circling. They're not going to go away. We need to give her some time to lie fallow, I think.
Well, and I don't think she's given, you know, and obviously, you know, you're speculating based on not knowing her.
I think forces outside Lindsay Lohan are ready to.
Right. And I think it's a matter at this point of her sort of deciding she's going to pull it together. So it's kind of dependent on her pulling it together. I don't know how likely that is. But if she does, I completely agree with Trey that the pieces are in place. And she is the kind of person who people would easily forgive. She hasn't done anything worse than what lots and lots and lots of other people have done.
Yeah, I mean, how much of what she's done has been, like, enormously, viciously mean-spirited? Mm-hmm. It's mostly been self-immolation.
Self-indulgent.
Right.
And, a lot of self-immolation.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
People will forgive a lot of self-immolation. Just ask Robert Downey Jr., for example. You can come back. I'm not saying she has necessarily as much talent as he does, but, you know, people will forgive you.
Man, there was a time when everybody thought of that guy as a big box of crazy.
Absolutely. Right. I don't know that he isn't. But, you know, he seems to have stopped having it keep movies from being finished. You know? Anyway.
All right. Well, and actually what inspired this idea in the first place was a trailer for a TV show that, to me, doesn't look enormously promising. Then I know Linda has said that she has seen it and likes it. A program on CBS called The Defenders.
Starting this fall,
starring Jerry O'Connell, who is not my choice for Tomorrow's Rediscovery.
Okay.
And my choice for Tomorrow's Rediscovery, Jim Belushi.
Really?
Oh.
The victim was shot in the back.
Wouldn't it be human nature, when seeing the gun, to turn away?
He flinched. It's possible.
Oh, I'm sorry. I need those photographs. So sorry. I got water all over here.
Back.
And this occurred to me entirely because of a single frame near the end of the commercials for The Defenders.
Thompson with that eye for detail.
Looking at his face, he had this sort of hollowed out, sort of hangdog expression. And he suddenly reminded me exactly of Bill Murray in Rushmore and Lost in Translation, where it was sort of the battered shell of a broken funny man.
Hmm.
And I realized, I don't hate Jim Belushi. I mean, he's a Chicago Bears fan, but, you know, I've forgiven worse. I've never found him enormously funny in anything, but that doesn't mean he's a no talent. And it occurred to me, like, that guy would make brilliant stunt casting in some sort of movie about, you know, a humbled man, a la sort of Mickey Rourke in The Wrestler.
I mean, there is some relationship between what you're suggesting about Jim Belushi and what I'm suggesting about Tony Danza, which is that swagger sometimes decays in an interesting way.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Not necessarily decay in the rot sense, but decay in the interesting changes over time as a result of exposure to various forces, right?
Right.
And what comes off in a certain way when you're 25 or even when you're 40 comes off quite differently when you're a little bit older. And I think that with Jim Belushi, you don't get as much kind of grasping wackety-schmackety from him in The Defenders, which, as Steven said, I liked. He does seem a little bit tamped down, and I think it's kind of a similar principle. It's a version of the same thing that happened with Mickey Rourke, I think, which is sometimes that kind of guy who's very charismatic. I don't know if Jim Belushi was, but, you know, charisma in a young guy.
Well, certainly bravado.
Right. Mm-hmm. Charisma and bravado in a young guy sometimes is interesting as that person gets older. You could even make that argument about Clooney, I think.
Is it as that person gets older and gets disillusioned? Because it sounded like that's what Thompson was talking about.
The Jim Belushi? I don't
know. Right, the
I
character has been sort of beaten up in the way that...
He's just sort of aging into a kind of a puffy, you know, his eyes are a little sunken.
But he's still doing the same thing?
He's still
thing?
Somewhat doing...
He's still coming at life the same way?
He's still doing a certain amount of bravado.
Right.
I'm not necessarily saying that The Defenders is going to be the vehicle that suddenly launches Jim Belushi into Oscar-winning status. I'm saying I think that there is a possibility down the line where you could have Jim Belushi in a role, and perhaps it's a supporting role like Bill Murray did in Rushmore, where all of a sudden everybody was like, whoa, I love that guy.
It does need to be something different from, I think, The Defenders. I mean, I haven't seen the show, but I've certainly seen the trailers. And
he's still somewhat doing bravado.
He started playing the smarmy, obnoxious friend back in About Last Night, which was the David Mamet film based on the David Mamet play. Sexual Perversity in Chicago. I mean, back then, opposite Rob Lowe, he was exactly the guy he has been for the rest of his career.
Right.
And this seems kind of like that guy, only older.
Right. And I think he needs to lose the Blues Brothers nonsense completely. If I'm casting Jim Belushi's future, I would ask that he not do that anymore.
Right. And I think it's not likely to be The Defenders, but his position in The Defenders is somewhat similar to, you could draw an analogy to Shatner in Boston Legal, where William Shatner, despite being known as kind of a hammy actor, suddenly was winning awards for being on Boston Legal. And it's kind of a similar role in that it takes a kind of a hammy guy and you kind of give him a little something to do. Shatner didn't really go anywhere with that other than staying sort of, he still is a TV guy. He's going to be on a new series in the fall. It's not like this...
on a terrible series this fall.
It's not like this became, you know, William Shatner goes off and has a career in indie movies. But I do think it's possible that Jim Belushi's trajectory in The Defenders will be respected in the same way as some of those Boston Legal guys were. And you could potentially get him rising up high enough to be award nominated. And then you're in a different, you have maybe some different possibilities, maybe people seeing you a little bit differently than they did when you were on According to Jim.
Right.
I'm really struck by something here. And tell me if I'm right. What Shatner, what Bill Murray, and I forget who else we've talked about, have in common. What they have in common, that move from swagger and bluster and bravado without experience to swagger and bluster and bravado with echoes of experience and some hollowness and defeatedness.
Sort of where bravado leads.
Yeah. They're Willie Loman.
Maybe.
I don't read books.
No, I think that's fair. I think it is, with some of these guys, they're flattered by the addition of an element of sadness.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that, again, I would return to Clooney, who I think when he was a young guy and he was on, you know, The Facts of Life, and he was sort of this hot young dude, they were playing that way. Nothing kind of really happened with him that much.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he was a little bit older, when he got old enough to be going ER and be an alcoholic and a, you know, sort of always a bit at loose ends, and he has always had an element of sadness in all of those performances, and I think everything he's done since then has had a little bit of sadness in it, which I have always thought is part of what makes him a very charismatic actor.
Right.
And I'm not, you know, I feel like the headline is going to be Linda compares Jim Belushi to George Clooney.
This has all just been one big frame job.
But what I'm saying is, you know, I think the introduction of being a little bit weather-beaten is good for guys who start off as kind of hot-shotty guys, whether they're young, sexy, hot-shotty guys like Clooney, or whether they're young, smart-alecky, hot-shotty guys like Glenn was saying about Belushi and About Last Night.
Yeah. It's that element of sadness and experience, I think, that tips somebody over from the contemptible to the tragic.
Mm-hmm.
If you're still doing the same thing, knowing that you trip on it every time, but you don't know how to do anything different, that's tragic.
And it becomes sort of more interesting.
It's world weariness, and it can show up in the performance, or it can show up as it does in Shatner on your face.
I look forward to my own smarminess converting itself to
world weariness.
World weariness, in a sense that
as do we all.
Is Stephen Thompson the next George Clooney?
I was thinking
on
myself
this week's
as the
Pop
next,
Culture Happy.
I was thinking the next Jim Belushi.
Yeah,
but,
I'll give you Tony Danza. We can split the difference.
Don't reach for the stars, kids. Reach for the top shelf in your kitchen.
Very good.
All right. Well, that concludes another episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour. Thanks so much to everyone here. You can read Monkey See online at npr.org/monkeysee. And in fact, this weekend on Monkey See, you can read a live blog of the Emmys with our own Linda Holmes. Who will be live blogging with you, Linda?
I will be live blogging with a couple of favorite Monkey See contributors, Mark Hirsch, and also my dear pal Joe Reed.
And you can, nay must, follow us on Twitter. Linda, what is your handle?
NPR Monkey See, very simple.
Glenn Weldon, what is your handle on Twitter?
GH Weldonverse.
Trey Graham.
Trey Graham.
I think I just gave away your
You did. You stepped on my lines, Thompson.
What is it? Trey Graham?
It's Trey Graham.
How do you spell Trey Graham?
That would be T-R-E-Y.
And Graham like the cracker.
No, Graham like golden.
My Twitter handle is I dislike Stephen, spelled S-T-E-P-H-E-N. And as always, all of this racket would be impossible without our fearless producer, Mike Katziff.
Yay!
You may follow Mike Katziff on Twitter at Mike Katziff, spelled M-I-K-E-K-A-T-Z-I-F. And Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our excellent theme music. So, by all means, please do everything you can to patronize
all of us and our various
all
projects.
All of us and our various projects. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour.